I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Guitar Nerd podcast. If you'd like to hear more of this absolute waffle, pop over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where for as little as $5 a month, you'll be able to become one of our Patreon exclusive backers. That means that not only do you get more of us, well, actually, that's it, you just get more of us. But if you pay $10 a month, you also get your name read out at the end of the podcast. Usually Joe does it in a silly voice. This week it's me. Hopefully, it will be me more often. Thanks very much for listening to Guitar Nerds. Take care.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Good evening.
And Jay Cross.
Hiya.
How's it going?
Good.
Matt? Excellent. I always say good evening, and then I realise that actually this might not ever, someone might not listen to it in the evening, so yeah. It's probably changed that.
From the feedback we've had, most people listen to it driving to work in the morning, so it's, yeah, it's not the evening for them, I guess.
Maybe if they're driving to work, we should keep the sort of random noises to a minimum in case it distracts people while they're driving.
Well, as you can hear, there's no Joe Branton this week, so most of the random noises will be gone, which is only a good thing. Matt, how's your week been?
It's been very good, thank you. Not a lot guitar related, although I did play a lot of guitar today, and I was doing stock take, so sort of guitar related.
Okay,
so a lot of guitars.
You got to see loads of guitars and then scan them with a little kind of hand scanner?
And then scan them with a gun and then go, yep, definitely, that's definitely that guitar.
So, was there anything that you were like, oh, I forgot we had this. This is cool.
Second hand, we've got a Dan Electro Wildman. Did I talk about that when it came in?
What?
It's Dan Electro Wildman. It's like a melted Explorer.
Wait, Wildman or Wild Thing?
No, Wild Thing. That's it. Wild Thing. Yeah. Wild Sunning. But that's weird. It's like, yeah, it's like a melted Explorer with slightly pointy edges.
Do you know what I think those guitars look like? You know when you have like a, what they called, a refresher's lolly? You know, one of those like chewy sweets, and you sort of try and bite the end off, and then two little bits sort of come up like that. That's what the wild thing looks like.
That's probably how they designed it.
Yeah, they went, oh,
someone
tell you what,
dropped a drumstick lolly on a piece of paper, and then they just sketched around it.
Yeah, yeah, I reckon that's probably what it was.
It was funny actually, because one of the new guys we've got was like, oh, what's this guitar? And he went, feels like it's made out of like cheap wood and wallpaper. And I went, it's because it is made out of cheap wood and wallpaper.
Exactly that, sir. Well done.
Did you see that Dan Electro have just launched their Facebook page?
Have they really? Yeah. That's amazing.
They just this
man,
week.
Man, that company, that's hilarious.
Who does someone else own Dan Electro, or are they just a company?
I think they're just in their own right, or it's someone who's like got rights to the name or something, because they come into this country through JHS.
I think it's JHS,
right?
Yeah.
I don't know really. Don't really know who owns it. It'd be interesting to, maybe we should track them down. Let's get an interview with the owner.
Well, yeah, because I have started the long journey of getting all the Dan Electro Food Series pedals. I'm going to do this
on Facebook.
I'm certain I can do it.
I saw this. I put this down in the running order of this podcast as Matt goes down the Dan Electro food pedal tunnel, and because this is a long, dark tunnel. So what did you get?
So I'd already got the chili dog, which I think I spoke about a few weeks ago, but I got the PB&J delay.
Nice.
Which actually sounds really good.
Okay.
I was like, oh. I bought it and it was modded, and there was a guy on the Facebook group who had a similar mod done where the original pedal doesn't go into oscillation. It's just got like X amount of repeats, and the guy had already modded it and included the little part with it, so you can actually get it to oscillate, and it sounds like really lo-fi and gritty. And I was like, god, this pedal's for like 20 odd quid, I was like, this pedal is actually really good.
Yeah, they're
despite it feeling like obviously quite cheap because of its like size, I was like, ah, this is all right.
I seem to remember the ones that weren't drive pedals actually sounding okay. The drive pedals I remember sounding pretty poor, but that's to be expected from a 20 quid pedal, I guess.
I mean, Dan Electro have always done good pedals. Like the Cool Cat, the Cool Cat series were all really, really cool.
Yeah.
And the Real Echo is that's one of my favourite pedals of all time. They're great.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because it really takes me back to when I first started playing guitar, and then one of the local guitar shops, that was pretty much, they had like a couple Boss pedals, and then like probably one or two MXR pedals, if that, and then just all these Dan Electro pedals. It's like, oh, I remember the Tuna Melt and the Pastrami.
Surf and Turf,
Fish and Chips.
Oh, nice. You know? All good. What's the EQ called?
The Fish and Chips,
right.
Is the EQ.
Yeah, I remember that one being good. And what about the little amp?
Was that called Bacon and Eggs?
Maybe. Corn Beef.
No, Corn Beef is the reverb.
Oh, is it? Okay, fine.
It's like they started off like Pepperoni Phaser. You're like, oh, yeah. That, you know, I'm seeing what you're going for. And
that's
like
cool.
Corned,
you know,
Beef reverb?
Yeah, totally. They've gone for the cool meats first, and they've ended up at Corned Beef.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I maybe really want some Corned Beef.
That's wrong.
The dirtiest of all meats. Anyway.
That and a can of Shandy Bass.
Oh, no, never the Shandy Bass. We should do a podcast on that one time, Matt, the time that we bought a load of Shandy Bass.
Worst summer decision ever on a slow day at work.
Yeah, really, really bad. So have you actually put this on a pedal board, or are you just sort of... Or are you going to buy the official pedal board? Because there was an official...
There is actually... it's called the... there's an official pedal board, but they actually did a box set called The Summer of Love, which... Is the pedal board and then like four pedals, including the little amp. So you can actually plug pedal board in, and then at the end, there's just a little amp.
Nice.
I should get that.
Hang it
on my wall, make some sort of art installation.
Finding this stuff? You're just buying on eBay?
It's all coming up on eBay for some reason. I think everyone's decided to sell them. So I'm like, oh, well, I'll snap these up.
Well, podcast listeners, if you've got some Dan Electro Food Series pedals to sell, Matt Knight is... will be a willing recipient, I'd imagine. Get in touch on the Facebook group.
Just not inflated prices.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're going to sell it to you. It's £200 for the fish and chips.
No, it's in fact, actually, there is one pedal that I think is that's going secondhand from Dan Electro that's always ridiculously priced, and that's the Sitar Swami.
Yeah.
The worst one they ever made is like always going for like 100 plus quid on eBay. I'm
mental.
Like, why?
Yeah, surely for that money, just get the Ravish Sitar Simulator. EHX.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's just bad. I remember having loads of the Dan Electro Psycho flanges left.
Yep.
As well, just like millions of them. Like, no one wants this flanger pedal.
No, and the reverse torque, which again now is worth loads of silly money. Crazy.
Yeah.
Jay Cross, been doing anything guitar related this week?
It's your new favourite question.
Yeah, and there's usually no answer.
I put on a gig this week.
You did put on a gig. It was very good.
It was good fun, wasn't it?
Probably, I reckon the second band on, probably the best. Probably blew the other people off stage, I would say.
I'm not going to talk about that. What I am going to talk about is the fact that one of the bands who was playing, the guitarist was really excited. He came up to me and he was like, I've got my pedal board sorted. And I was like, oh yeah. And he went... I didn't remember having this conversation with him, but apparently like a year or so ago I was like, mate, you need to just get a pedal board now. Like, the pedal board he's got is a Stag UPC, you know, so it's not anything, you know, it's just, but it's good, it's a start. And he's got everything on the board, and he went, oh, what do you think? And I was like, part of me was really wanted to be like really encouraging and be like, oh man, this looks great. And part of me wanted to be like, listen, just, you've got to be harsh with him, otherwise he's never going to learn.
So what were you criticising? The fact that it was a UPC board?
Oh no, the fact that the pedals were in the incorrect order. Oh. That's what I was criticising.
Okay.
But what we did figure out is, so he had two amps with him, and at the end of his chain, incorrectly at the end of his chain, but at the end of his chain was a stereo pedal. It was the, I can't remember what it is now, the Electric Mistress, I think it was.
Okay.
The
flanger?
It's a flanger and chorus. I think. Is that right, Matty? The Electric Mistress is flanger and chorus?
No, it's just a flanger. What you're thinking of is it's always famously mistaken as Andy Sumner's from The Police always using a chorus, but he actually was using an Electric Mistress.
So they're stereo, and he was using one of those at the end, and he had two amps with him, but he was only using one amp, and I was like, mate, just plug them both in.
Why did he have two amps?
One as a spare.
Okay.
One as a spare. So he had his JCM 900.
Yeah.
And the spare amp was his JCM 800.
Okay. Which ones do you use normally then?
The 9.
Why?
I don't know.
The 8.
I don't know.
Much better amp.
But yeah, he plugged them both in and it sounded wicked. And it's just one of those things, like, if ever you have the opportunity to go into two amps, always take that opportunity because it just sounds so much bigger.
Yeah.
You know, they were mic'd up, obviously, but it isn't the same effect, especially when you turn on a stereo pedal and you've got that really, like, ultra-wide panning.
Yeah.
You know, it just sounded absolutely huge. And, yeah, it was good. It's just one of those things, like, reaffirming what you are pretty sure you already know, but just haven't had a chance to try for a little while. It's like that ultra-wide panning through a stereo pedal just sounded amazing. And essentially, podcast listeners, just buy two amps, because if you don't have two amps, you're cheating yourself. You're cheating yourself.
I'm not sure it works like that.
And everybody else. You're cheating yourself and you're cheating everyone else. You're kidding yourself. It's not big. It's not clever. It's not cool. Stop it. Buy another amp.
I don't... Okay.
Buy another amp.
Fine. I'm not going to argue with you.
No, that's what you need to do. It sounds better. Much better.
Good.
Have you done anything guitar related, Mark?
I played a gig this week.
Did you?
This sort of like really dodgy promoter phoned me up and said, do you want to play a gig? You won't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
The only beer that will be free is rubbish Cronenberg.
It's not true. I bought you 2 pints.
You will obviously rock the house.
Mm-hmm.
People will be
walk
falling
out
over themselves,
okay,
to say how good you are.
Okay.
You've got 20 minutes. Go nuts.
Everybody was like, oh, I thought they were better last time. Is it a different guitarist this time? That's what everyone was saying as they were walking out the door.
No, no one said that. Everyone said way better. Way better. I did a gig. Interestingly, I guess in terms of gear stuff, obviously I used the Mark bass and the P bass, as you would imagine. We had no pedals on stage, I don't think.
Did Dan not take his pedal board?
Maybe we had tuners on stage, I think, and that was it.
Right, okay.
Dan was using his little 1974X Marshall, which sounded pretty damn good.
Just turned up full, was it? Or
it wasn't turned up full.
I mean, it was
not
very loud.
Not on sticky bikes.
It was very loud, but yeah, I can imagine it wasn't turned up full. The sound man would have...
It did sound very good, and it was the... Dan had the, without a shadow of a doubt, the most expensive rig of anybody who was playing that night.
Yes.
So he had his custom shop Tele.
This is Dan Grace, by the way, occasional Guitar Nerds contributor.
So he was playing his custom shop Tele, which we go on about quite a lot, through his Marshall 1974X.
Yeah.
And it was without a doubt, like, it really was without a doubt, like, the best sounding element of the show.
It sounded amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Not to downplay the other guitarist, Tim. He was using his Susan Kettner Tubemeister head with a US Strat with a JB
Strat
Junior in the bridge, which sounded really good. That guitar, there's something about that guitar.
Yeah.
It's one that was kicking around when we were working in the shop
it
for
is.
A long time.
It
had some like cosmetic damage.
Yeah, it got dropped
When... No, something got dropped on it.
No, it got dropped.
Oh, did it? Okay.
It got dropped on a day that I was not working there. Okay. I should...
And by the same, I wasn't there.
Well, it just it wouldn't happen on my watch, is okay. what I'm saying. But it got dropped, and that guitar... That's one of those things, though. When those guitars get, like, a couple... Because it probably did get, like... It became a demo guitar at the shop, yeah. because it was, like... It was a good guitar, like, a really good guitar, because it was an American Standard Strat, but it had this big dink on it, so it sort of didn't matter if... It was, you know, if it got a little bit more damage here and there. So it became my demo guitar, and it probably had a couple of hundred hours worth of playing.
Yeah.
And you can't replicate that.
No.
You know, unless you go for a relic, you know, but yeah. for, you know, sub £1,000, it just goes to show that your guitar, the more you play it, as long as you've got like a guitar of that sort of level,
half decent quality.
If you play it and play it and play it, it will just keep getting better.
It's probably the best argument I've seen for a guitar. Like, if you went to the shop, you wouldn't necessarily pick that one up because it did have quite a large chunk out yeah, the front yeah. of it. It's like yeah, yeah. right in the front of the guitar. But it's kind of the best argument for like play the guitar in store.
Always,
and if
always.
You like that one. Just get it. Because I think Tim was trying like a couple of Strats yeah. and that one was just way better. And like you say, maybe it's because someone had played it for a long time or maybe it's just the fact that it was a better guitar.
It was, and it did take... And, you know, it is one of... And it's completely understandable. It did take him a little bit of time to convince himself that it was okay going for the one with a big chip on it.
Yeah.
But I kept... handing it back to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stress I only did this because he's my mate. I wouldn't normally be the sort of person to just give a guitar to someone and they're like, I'm not really sure about it, and I'm like, give it another go. That was never ever my style. But because Tim was my friend, give him the guitar and he's like, oh, I'm not really sure, and I'm like, mate, it doesn't matter about the damage, you're gonna damage it. And it really was such an astonishing guitar.
He loves it now as well. He's kind of come to accept that that's like a little quirk of how it looks, and it's the one. So
there we go.
A couple of new bits have turned up this week in terms of things for demo and things to help with demos.
Oh, not I like it.
Indeed. First of all, the Empress tape delay arrived. The guys at Empress are kind enough to send us a tape delay over. I've not really spent enough time with it yet to make up my mind. I think it's good.
They're
as
great.
You'd expect.
I've actually owned one.
Have you?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I used to have the... the super tape delay, which was their, which is like the kind of father to this one, I suppose. They made one called the super delay, which had loads of different settings on it.
Yeah.
But most people found that the delay or the tape one sounded like the best. So loads of people were requesting that they build the tape one just in its own box.
Because the super delay is a lot of money, isn't it? The super delay is like timeline money.
It's like $450, it's pretty expensive. But it came out before the timeline, because I had one of these before I bought a Strymon.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like my main delay pedal. And it did like a similar thing. It had like 8 different presets. You know, you had like a high and low pass filter. You could do loads of stuff with the expression pedal. You could add modulation in. I think each mode, so there's like normal, tap, reverse, rhythmic, tape. Each one of those had 3 different modes as well. So you had like 20 odd different algorithms you could use in it. And it did actually sound, you know, really, really good for a tiny pedal. But I think once the timeline came out, I was like, actually, I think this is going to work better. And ultimately it did, but it's still an amazing sounding delay pedal.
Yeah, we just had a quick mess around, actually. I realised we've got a lot of delay pedals here, kind of like stacking up. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to do some like comparison videos. So or you know, Periscope or something, and just plug them all in and see what people think. So if you want to get,
because they also do the multi-drive, which is that one that's like an overdrive, a fuzz, and a distortion, like all in one box.
Oh, nice!
And then it's just a button that like flicks between all 3 of them, which is quite cool.
Cool. To be honest, I don't know a huge amount about the company.
They're really cool. They're Canadian, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
I just know that their stuff is very highly regarded. So I'm going to give this tape delay a go first. And we'll go from there, really.
The thing that I sort of feel a little bit indebted to Empress for is their buffer.
Yes.
And I think they were sort of the first... It was when I first tried the Empress buffer, it was the first time that I really sort of took a step back and was like, wow, this really sounds so much better you know, even if you just get the one that doesn't, because they do two, they do a buffer and they do the buffer plus, which has got, you can, it's got a boost circuit plumbed into it, I think, if I remember correctly. And it's, but even if you don't go for that, you just get the buffer. So there's no switches on it or anything, and you just, you know, you could tape it to the underside of your board. It just sounds so much better. It's just, you know, really, you know, I hate going on about the, actually I don't, it's my favourite subject, talking about, you know, why buffered pedals are better than true bypass pedals. But if you do insist on having true bypass pedals, you need to have a buffer. In which case you might as well just go for buffer pedals. But, you know, it just sounds better with that Empress buffer, just brings everything out. And I really cannot recommend enough getting, if you get the chance to, just take your board. If you've got like a fully, you know, true bypass or like a mostly true bypass board, just take a board to a guitar shop and plug in one of these Empress buffers before it, and it will just, like, I really can't recommend that enough, because it does make a huge difference. It really does. It just brings everything out. And that's for me, that's the thing that I'll sort of always hold Empress in high stead for. But their compressor's amazing as well.
Yeah.
Which is something I don't really care about.
But. No, of course. Well, yeah, that's the thing where I first heard them, I think, is the buffer and the compressor. Mm-hmm. The compressor, I think, used to be like a kind of one of those pedals that you couldn't really get easily over here, and people used to rave about it and say, like, oh, yeah, I've ordered this thing in. Have you got much experience with the Empress stuff, Matt, apart from owning the tape delay?
I've tried a lot of the range. They came in because we were doing them obviously at the last shop I worked at, but I know a few people that had owned them beforehand, had good experience with the a lot of the drives, and the tremolo as well was really good.
Okay.
Because the tremolo's got like sort of different rhythms, it's got tap tempo, which is really nice. But yeah, as Jay said, the buffers are some of the best ones out there.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, we've got that. We'll have a full demo up soon on the YouTube channel. We might do some Periscope stuff with it. I've got 2 weeks off in a week or so, so I'm going to try and set up a load of Periscope stuff. And
do
you?
Yeah.
Oh, Matty, let's get together and we'll do some videos.
Let's smash through like all the pedals that we're getting sent.
Well, indeed, we've got loads of stuff to do. Loads of stuff.
I'm taking a week off during that week as well.
Oh no, actually, mine's cancelled.
We're busy.
Mine's cancelled.
Oh, sorry. Now. Wait, was it next?
Sorry.
Busy and or ill.
I think we should maybe go to like a theme park or something. Should we do something that doesn't involve guitars? Let's go.
Let's go to a theme park.
Are they open yet? Wait, it's March. They're probably not open yet. Let's go to.
Not Alton Towers though, because you know bad reputation.
Yeah, Thorpe Park. I don't know.
That's
if
the easiest one to get to for us.
Shall we? Shall I hire a car and should we go to Disneyland Paris for the day?
That actually sounds wicked. I'd totally be up for that.
Leave Joe at work.
Yeah. No, Joe's on tour.
Oh yeah, of course.
Joe's
yeah.
on tour. Oh, we should go on our own little tour, which has one date. It's
Disneyland Paris.
Yes, yeah, us on a date at Disneyland Paris. I'm into it.
I remember when I was in a band a couple of years ago, and this band put up their poster like, yeah, UK tour, and it was like London, 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 Hull, London. I was like, that's not a UK tour.
They're all in the UK. What's the problem? So talking about doing videos and Periscopes and stuff, the other thing that turned up this week was the IK Multimedia iRig Pro. iRig Pro Duo, in fact.
Equally as exciting as the Empress tape delay.
Well, not... I mean, it is equally as exciting in a different way,
yes.
In that this is super functional. So I was looking out for a sound card that I could plug straight into my phone or a laptop and stuff that's like really small. And IK Multimedia actually got in touch and said, do you want to try one of these and give your kind of feedback to the guitar community? It arrived last week, actually, but I've only just had time to plug it in. And it works. I guess is the only thing I can say about it. I plugged it into my phone and used it with the Amplitude app, and didn't
which
really
is free.
There is a free version. It's quite limited.
Right. Okay.
I think I've not had time to investigate, but I assume you get a more fully featured version with the iRig. So there's probably a code or something in there to put in, and you get some more stuff.
Yeah,
but you don't have to use it with that app, do you? You can just use it as a direct interface into
exactly
like any third party bit of software.
Yeah, that's
what I was going to say. So it's ideal for us because obviously we've got external amp modeling with the two note system that we use, and we can run that into the iRig and then the iRig into the phone, so we can do periscopes and get a really nice guitar sound going in. So a nice kind of modelled sound.
That's awesome, especially for like quick video demos and stuff like that. That's just, I mean, all the iRigs, they've kind of really were they the first company to kind of really do something?
They were the first ones to get on board with it. Yeah, like the iRig, the first iRig was one of the first ones that I can remember.
Well, because the first one was just, in fact, the first couple I think just went in through the headphone jack.
They did. Right.
You know, they weren't even lightning connection. Yeah. So you just plugged in through the headphone jack, and it was just a bit rubbish. Like, I mean, they're only 30 quid. So for 30 quid, it was great. Yeah. And it's a great scenario, a great option, but you know, just a bit crap.
Well,
like,
I think the problem was because I don't think the technology had really got there. You were turning the output of your phone or iPod into an input and an output.
Yeah.
So you got like a lot of crosstalk between the two like channels.
Yes.
So once they kind of actually went, hold on, if we can use the interface, like it's made a world difference. But the cool thing is they do like a Lavalier microphone and like proper studio mics now, don't they?
And we talked about the acoustic pickup as well a couple months ago.
An iRig acoustic.
I actually seem to remember that when this all was sort of kicking off a couple of years ago, do you remember PV brought one out as well?
Yes.
It was the, I can't remember what it's called, the PV.
I can't remember either.
But it was really, really good. It used the same technology as the same chassis kind of,
but
as
it was
the
iRig, powered, wasn't it? So it had,
it was, yeah, some, it just had a battery,
yeah, it had some noise cancelling,
and I found it really difficult working in the shop because people would come in and say like, oh, I want to buy an iRig, and I'd be like, okay, I understand you want to buy an iRig, but I've tried these two side by side, this one is cheaper and it's made by PV, I know it's made by PV, but it sounds a lot better, and they're like, I'd love to buy an iRig.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was a very, very difficult sell because iRig had done so well at sort of, at marketing themselves as the interface. And I think that they've still kind of got that.
Yeah, well, I think because the great thing, I mean, it was the PV amp kit.
The amp kit, yes, that's right.
Amp link kit, wasn't it called?
Amp link kit, yeah.
I think because the reason they sound better than the early iRig ones is because they were a separate breakout box. They still went into the headphones, but the little box that was battery powered provided two separate channels for the input and the output.
Right.
So you stopped getting that kind of noise that you might have got with some of the early amplify ones.
Well, in my kind of early test of the iRig Pro Duo, there's none of that. It's all works very, very well. Powers off a 9-volt, or you can actually put two AA batteries in there as well. So,
oh, really?
Right. Well.
So you could, even if you wanted to, let's say you wanted a slightly nicer or higher powered headphone output from your phone, you could throw your phone and the iRig Duo in a bag powered by batteries and listen to your headphones on that.
Really?
So you actually get a better sound through your headphones because you've got a little amp in there.
Well, exactly. It's a sound card in the same way that you'd plug a sound card into your computer or, you know, right, well, whatever. So, cool. Neat little bit of kit. And we're going to probably do a full review of it. I'll do something written for the site, I think, and maybe sort of video overview. But we'll be using it for all the stuff that we do that's recorded on a phone. So any of the Periscope things or any quick videos that we do, it'll be using that. So looking forward to doing some stuff with it.
You're right, you sound a little croaky.
Yeah, my throat's going, as always, you know. I talk a lot.
So. Yeah.
Should we do some news?
News.
Is that it? That's all we get?
Sorry.
I wasn't sure who was going to go in for that.
Sorry. It's time for the news.
Okay, good. I'm into it. Slightly less bombastic than Joe Branton.
I mean, if that could be my epitaph,
that's the gravestone.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
We've got that in recorded evidence now. So when you die the rock and roll early death, we have to go to your parents and say, yeah, what you wanted was slightly less bombastic than Joe Branton on his headstone.
Actually, if you could change that to Joseph_900, just, you know.
At Joseph_900.
I'd really like it to be the sort of thing where in like...
Hashtag, you know, see ya.
Yeah, I'd still like hashtag LLAP, but, you know.
What's LLAP? Live long and prosper. Yeah. Right, okay.
I'd really like to be, as everything is really, I'd like it to be like really dated and for people to look at me as they do now and be like, you bloody idiot.
I would like the
hashtag and the at sign.
Just your Snapchat picture, you know, that's got the dots on it that you can take a picture of and then you become a Snapchat friend. Just have that. So in like 100 years when it's completely eroded, people are like, oh, what's that strange marking on there? The only evidence left of Snapchat was on your gravestone. Anyway, let's do some news. So first up, Fender announced over the last couple of days the custom shop George Harrison Telecaster.
I missed this entirely.
I missed it until today. Matt Knight has probably seen it, though, I'd imagine.
I have.
What's the deets?
Seen and ordered, not for myself.
Really? Oh, wow.
It's quite cool because I didn't realise that the one that he played was actually really just a prototype.
Yes.
I thought that there was like a limited production run, but it was actually built basically for him by Fender, by two guys in the Fender factory. I can't remember their names. Basically built it and then gave it to George Harrison, which I thought was like, obviously imagine being an artist where someone just goes, oh, we've just built this for you. Happy day. Here you go. Here's this awesome guitar. So also the amazing thing about the neck is it's not one piece rosewood. It's actually three pieces, two pieces for the back of the neck and then a rosewood fretboard.
Oh, okay.
Split down the center.
So it's split down the center. Okay. Yeah.
Still with a skunk stripe.
I don't think so. Because okay. I think the truss rod's obviously in the neck, but I think the way it's split down the middle, they've obviously like routed it out so you
can
see.
I guess it will be 60s style. Yeah.
Well, this is the weird thing. So, I was reading the thing that Fender put up about it, and they were saying, "Oh, obviously, if you looked at it, you just go, oh, it's all original." But actually, there's a few differences because it was like a prototype. It's got a different decal from when it was.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Built, so it's got a really early Fender logo on it, despite it being built like in the late 60s,
yep,
or like the mid to late 60s, where it would have had like the gold logo. It's got the really early spaghetti type logo, which has been placed sort of too far towards the nut, so the string tree is actually a slightly different position, so you get different break angle, which they say kind of changes the way the guitar resonates and obviously the sustain that you get. The nut is also wider, so it's like an eighth of an inch wider than most normal tellies.
Okay.
So it's got wider string spacing. So all of that make it kind of really unique to what a telly would have been at the same time. Because when we had a custom shop rosewood telly before, and the thing I found about it, I thought it'd be a really heavy guitar, but it wasn't at all. Actually, it was sort of really well balanced. It's just the sheer amount of sustain that you get from it.
Yeah,
it's like a really naturally compressed wood, so it's like so resonant and so loud unplugged, and then like each note just like sustains forever. But it's master built, so it's going to be like obviously top top quality. I think Paul Waller's doing the master building. Sort of lightly relic'd. It's like closet classic relic, because I don't think his is like particularly well used. I don't know what they're limiting the amount to, but it'd probably be only be like 50.
Yeah,
I would
it's not going to even probably break 100, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and Abby, you've got... Yeah, the Abigail Yabara has been dragged out of her...
Oh, really? They brought her back?
...peaceful retirement.
Of course she has. Like, did she make the pickups on the original?
She must have done.
She probably did.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be
Abby,
surprised.
Abby, do you remember in the... Abby, here's a question for you. Do you remember in the late 60s?
No.
No.
Bless her, yeah. Her retirement in 2013. I like the fact that they who broke her 2013 retirement. It's like, no, you dragged her back,
yeah,
kicking and screaming. Yeah. So I mean, it's going to be an awesome guitar. Like the normal Rosewood Tellies that you find every now and then, they have to be master built if you're going to get a Rosewood Telly. Are just amazing guitars.
Well, that's not completely true. They did a limited run of Japanese ones.
They did, but the thing with the Japanese ones is they were rosewood laminate, not solid rosewood.
Oh, right, of course. Yeah.
So these are solid rosewood. And just solid rosewood guitars, I mean, you're not going to get a lot of chance to play a solid rosewood instrument because there aren't that many out there. It's just such a unique sound to anything else.
I mean, even those solid rosewood neck guitars
sound really different.
Sound so much different to like a standard sort of 60s-ish Strat or Telly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's
cool. Built in 68. I didn't realise he had it, basically used it for Let It Be and then that final like rooftop concert, and then that was it. That was the only time he ever used it.
Yeah. That's why I find it quite funny that this guitar's been kind of like idolised. It's on so few songs that you would kind of think like, how do you even know what this sounds like? Do you know what I mean?
But it's the iconic shot, isn't it?
It's one of many with the Beatles.
That's
what always made me
laugh about the Clapton when they did the Beano Les Paul, because
the Rosie. You're
the
thinking
Lucy,
of
Lucy, Lucy. No, because with I think with one of them, because he doesn't own it, and then they gave it to him. We're like, he was like, yeah, I think this is. I'm sure I remember seeing a video with the. I'm sure it was the Beano Les Paul because it got stolen.
Yeah, no,
like,
I think that's.
I'm pretty sure that this is how it was because with Lucy, Danny Harrison owns.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So Danny Harrison owns Lucy because Eric Clapton gave it to.
Yeah, to George Harrison. Yeah.
In exchange for his wife.
Yeah. But with
that's not true.
That's not true. But with the Beano Les Paul, I think it got stolen in like the mid 60s. So when they decided to create a replica of it, it was all based on photos. And then when they gave it to him, he was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is what it was. It's like, you know, it was used for like one record and that was it.
Yeah.
But it's become like an iconic instrument, you know.
Well, there we go. So do you know what else it comes with? Is it some sort of special case and loads of stuff?
Yeah, they haven't really kind of said much about what else it comes with. They've sort of really just shown off the guitar. I'd imagine, to be honest, it probably comes with just a normal... There's only one guitar I know of that comes with a special case, and that's the Gilmore, because they still put the book with every guitar, so it's got a slightly different pocket in it.
Yeah.
Well, but some of the 52 Tellies...
Oh, some of the 52s come with the original case.
Come with two cases,
And the modern case.
Yeah.
But,
I wouldn't be surprised if it comes with something different because the
probably comes with a book or some sort of special certificate.
Because the Lucy came with a copy of the White Album. Do you remember?
Yes, it did.
It came with a copy of the White Album, and it came with a book. And I really wouldn't be surprised if Fender have gone.
They're trying to outdo Gibson.
Yeah, if Fender went, okay, cool. So when Gibson did a George Harrison guitar, they got this and this. Let's come on, we can do better than that.
Yeah, I'd be into that. I like that. Healthy competition. Comes with a copy of a far inferior album, Let It Be. Enjoy that. So George Harrison is not the only guitar hero to pick up a new signature model in the last week or so. Matt Knight, tell us about the PRS John Mayer.
Yeah, right. First of all, can you guess how much it is?
Oh, my word.
I think I know, so I'm not going to say anything. Jay Cross.
Jay.
What is the model? Is it just a...
So tell Jay the name and the spec, and he'll have to guess how much.
Okay. So John Mayer, obviously left Fender, I think early last year, 2014.
Yeah.
And, you know, he started doing the thing with the Grateful Dead, Dead and Company, and this is the guitar that he's mainly been seeing play. So it's a PRS.
Yeah.
It's the, like, Eagle spec. So it's got the two humbuckers and the narrow field, which is their mini humbucker in the middle, all custom wound for him.
Of course.
It's also, bizarrely enough for PRS, a longer scale length. It's actually 23.375. So it's,
can't get away from that Fender. He just
that's not Fender scale though.
I know it's not, but it's longer.
It's longer than a PRS scale, but it's just slightly below a Fender scale.
Right.
All of the humbuckers are coil tapped. For that what, classic
standard coil tone.
No, there's three switches. That would be weird. Put three humbuckers in and then coil tapped as standard. And then it's got a treble boost circuit built into it and a preamp that's all switchable as well. So five switches, volume tone, five-way selector switch, three humbuckers.
So this means there's a battery in the back somewhere?
Yes. Semi-hollow.
It's
also carved flame maple back and sides.
Of course, yeah.
Birds? It's also got a custom design. Yeah, birds. Custom designed sticker inside the actual F hole.
Okay.
Bizarrely enough, and John Mayer is engraved into the heel at the back, and then there's also a shiny numbered sticker on the back plate on the back as well. It's also, just to top it off so you can work out the price, it's also private stock. They're only taking orders for 3 weeks and they won't build more than 100.
What were we saying, Jay Cross?
So I don't think it will be more than 20 grand because the Paul's 24 Five was it? It was
28.
Paul's 28. They were, I think, like 23 grand.
They were 28.
28 grand. Okay, right. So I don't. Oh, of course, yeah. So I don't think.
He actually
built them himself. It won't be that much. But it's going to be more than a standard 15 grand.
You're over, actually.
Okay, right. Go on. How much?
11,000.
Dollars or pounds?
Pounds.
Right. Okay.
So. Because I can't imagine it's going to be the same in dollars, because obviously then everyone would just buy them from America. But yeah, basically every dealer who is a main PRS dealer everywhere in the world has been offered the chance to buy one.
Yeah.
And it's the first 100 dealers who order one. And I think dealers are probably only allowed to order one.
Yeah,
I would have thought maybe two.
Yeah.
Which actually is quite a lot, considering one guitar that I forgot to mention that also got announced this week, sort of under the radar, because it's probably not as well known a player, is JD Simo. He's like a big Nashville guitarist, and Gibson have announced a collector's choice of his 335, and they're only making 25.
Okay.
So I was like, that's like mega limited.
Yeah.
And it's only 4,500, so yeah.
Well, you know, cheap. Just a cheap one. You know, just a cheap one.
Get three, it's basically the same price.
I'm going to throw it out there. I don't think the John Mayer guitar is that expensive for what it is.
Well, I mean, if you compare it to... Firstly, if you compare it to other private stocks of a similar spec, I mean, what's the standard for a private stock? Now, you know, I realise...
I think they start at like five eight. Or six, don't they?
Is it that? I thought it was more like eight.
I think it depends what you go for.
Yeah, of course it does, yeah.
But, I mean, I actually, you know, and I think... You know, anyone out there in the guitar world will know that obviously PRSs, a majority of PRSs don't hold their value as well as maybe some other guitars.
But that's why
recently I think PRS guitars are, you know, obviously now less expensive than custom shop Gibsons, and that wasn't the case sort of like 5 or 6 years
but
ago.
But that's only because PRS haven't put up their prices and Gibson have.
Yeah. But I think this is probably one of the few that would probably maintain some sort of long-term, because of the name behind it. It's also, I was just reading here, it comes with one of those cool Paisley cases that they do. So it's all the like vintage Paisley Tolex.
Yep.
And it's Brazilian rosewood headstock veneer, Brazilian rosewood board, and then like a different wood all for the binding as well.
Where are they getting it from?
They've owned it for a long time,
right?
Because I think the thing is, it's you have to be able to prove
where it came from yeah,
and when it was cut down. So it's kind of getting the CITES certificates as well. So everything will probably come with some sort of basically passport. Right. So when Taylor did their Brazilian Rosewood guitars, it came with a huge book, which was the CITES. Because we've had a taken in a couple of guitars recently that have had... we took in a secondhand PRS recently and had a Brazilian board, which was a run they did about 10 years ago. And we basically couldn't sell it outside of the UK because if it went overseas... Because did you see the thing in the news recently with Brian Adams and his 57 Martin?
No.
So he took it on tour... and he was playing in Egypt, and then when they flew out of Egypt, they took the guitar out to check it over, and then they like drew on the guitar.
Oh,
they
marked I did see on that. The guitar
in like green fluorescent marker.
Yeah,
because obviously they have to know what wood it is for obviously travel purposes, and then they wrote on it in like fluorescent green marker.
Why? So, why did they do that? Why did they write on it?
I don't know. Apparently, it's not the first time it's happened to him either.
Really?
Wow.
Imagine taking... he's taking a 60-year-old guitar on tour.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he could just be using a X-Series Martin or something on stage. You know what I mean? It's probably good enough for the audience to hear the difference.
Wow,
you know?
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Good on him, I'd say. But yeah, I mean, gutted. Absolutely gutted.
He said it was fixable, apparently. I'd imagine it probably...
Get some WD-40 on it.
Yeah.
Get some T-cut.
A little bit of Server Soul.
Just put a different sticker over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sign it yourself, Brian.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
And then sell it. Job done. I don't think it's that much money because of the name attached. I think we've seen the appreciation of those, the initial run of custom shop Strats, was it? The John Mayer ones that went
Black Strats, they're like 20 grand now, something ridiculous. They never come up. It's kind of like the Stevie Ray Vaughan, the when they did the not the Lenny, the DSRV one, when Fender did that, and I think they were 11,000 when they came out. They came in the flight case and they came with the custom strap, and I don't think like one comes up on the market probably every like 3 or 4 years.
It's like,
you can, for the same money though, you can buy his Tube Screamer.
Oh yeah, I didn't put that in the news this week because it was so ridiculous, but now you've mentioned it. So Stevie Ray Vaughan's original Tube Screamer has come up, and someone's asking for what, 100 grand?
No,
it's $11,000.
And it's in a shop, it's not him who's selling it.
Okay, I realise that he's not alive anymore.
Well, yeah, okay, but it's not his estate that's selling it, is what I mean. You know, it's like someone has put it into a shop, and the shop has gone, I'll do it.
Cesar Diaz, who was his tech, he had three. Steve Revorn always had three that were on tour, and that's one of them. And it comes with the letter provenance to say that obviously he used it, and someone obviously bought it at the time, went, yeah, this will be a solid investment, and then just obviously decided to sell it and gone, yeah, 11 grand. Because, I mean, you know, you might as well, you've got nothing to lose, really, if you might as well put it up for whatever you want, and then someone eventually is going to pay it.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And then that pedal is always worth that amount of money. That's never going to...
It will never go down. And again, I don't think that's that much money.
No.
Well, if you're looking at it from a strictly...
I mean, it's a Tube Screamer, so whatever. Yeah.
So what you've got to do is you've got to look at it from a strictly like memorabilia point of view,
totally,
which is something that we sort of don't really get into very often.
It's completely.
But, you know, if you look at the value of some, you know, just like, don't even have to be guitar related. Like, look at go and find like a Beatles tour poster from you know, like an original tour poster from the 60s, and you're probably paying half of that. You know,
you can get that stuff quite cheap, but it's the stuff that belongs to the artist.
Recently there was a guitar that Elvis played at a particular show in Las Vegas, and it's like it had like Elvis Presley all inlaid on the fretboard and everything. And at the end of one song, he leaned over to a guy at the front row and just went, "This is for you," and then just gave it to him like randomly, and like right at the end of the show. And this guy had to then be like police escorted out of the building and everything. And he just kept it for years and years and years. And then was like, "Oh, I need to sell it." And they were like, "You know, how much is it worth?" And they were just like, "Well, it's worth whatever someone's willing to pay for it, but we'll try and auction it for like $100,000. Do you know what I mean? It's
bonkers,
crazy.
But like, you know, you compare that to something like, I guess it's a different kettle of fish, because, you know, something like the the Gary Moore, Peter Green Les Paul.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's different because it's a 59 Les Paul, which is worth more money than Les Paul, most Les Pauls anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that's worth $2 million, how
ten,
much is...
$10,000 for a Tube Screamer.
Well, yeah, absolutely,
it's
yeah.
It's fine. I don't think that's that much money. Someone who's the most massive fan in the world that's got a load of money will undoubtedly pay it, and it will sit in their collection. It's not like you're paying $10,000 for a pedal to go on a board. Yeah.
It's gonna go on a Facebook forum.
Yeah,
it's sort of like, you know, $10,000 that you're never gonna lose.
No, like, it's completely, it's, like you say, it's an investment. You're putting a whole chunk of money that doesn't really exist into a thing that's essentially not worth any more than £100 Tube Screamer, but that money will go up. That you, by owning that thing, you've turned that big chunk of money that you put into it into even more money. That's all it is.
I tell you what should really happen is Ibanez should buy it. Ibanez should buy it, and then they should...
do a reissue.
Yeah, I mean, official or...
But it's just a Tube Screamer.
But, like, official or unofficial, you just, like, you just chip off, you just get it, and you just copy the relicing exactly, and then you sell it for £100 instead of, you know... And they'll sell 1,000 of those, and then they've got their money back. You know, whatever.
Yeah, like, if they sell it for like $300 or something.
Well, not even that. Sell it for the same price as a standard Tube Screamer.
Well, I'm just thinking they'd need, yeah.
You know, if you put a little bit more effort into it and sell it for, you know, even like, what's a Tube Screamer nowadays? £130? Even if you sell this one for like £200.
Oh, if you sell it for £230 and you sell 1,000, you've made your money back.
I mean...
Yeah.
Happy days.
Yeah, it's not that much money.
Did you see, you know, a few days ago I put that on the Guitar Nerds Facebook page, I put that 57 Strat that was coming up in an auction.
Okay.
Like last week, because there was a guitar-specific auction in, I think it was in Bath, and me and my dad were watching all the guitars on there, and they had, an original 50 Strat, one owner from 1957 to 2013, when it then got inherited by someone else in the family. And it went for £21,000, which I was like, that's actually, like, relatively cheap.
Yeah.
Like, had the case, it had all of the original strings on it, had all the original paperwork, and I was just like, that's £21,000. Like, if you had that spare, that there's no better way you could spend £21,000.
Yeah.
You've just bought a house, Matt. You could have remortgaged straight away and put an extra £21,000 on. I don't know what you're playing at.
I mean, you know, if the opportunity arises in a few years, maybe I can convince Amy that we shouldn't remodel the house. We should just buy a 57 Strat.
Do it. Definitely.
But, like, in all seriousness, I do think that's a fairly solid investment. You know,
oh, totally.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
If, like, you know, the bottom isn't likely to drop out of the vintage guitar market anytime soon.
No.
In fact, almost certainly the opposite.
Yeah.
And if you can buy a guitar that's in good nick from, you know, it doesn't really matter how old it is. You know, if you've got something that's a 50s guitar and it's in relatively good nick, that's just going to keep getting better. You know, it's not going to all of a sudden...
It's not like they're going to make any more.
No, well, absolutely. Yeah.
You can't get that.
No,
again.
Just don't store it next to the radiator and you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's the thing. Look after it. And even if you had completely muffed it up, like in that case, say they'd had it in the family, but it had been up in the loft where it was a bit cold and stuff, still going to be worth a load of money.
Yeah.
Because people will always still want it, you know. I would say £21,000 well spent. Now, John Mayer and George Harrison aren't the only artists getting new stuff this week. Seymour Duncan have just announced the Jeff Loomis Blackout pickups. Jeff Loomis Blackout pickups. Hard to say that. Matt, what's the deets?
I'm really sorry. I can't remember what band he plays in.
We talked about this the other week.
He's a YouTube guy, isn't he?
No, he's not. He's in Arch Enemy.
Okay.
That's the one.
But he also, I'm sure he does some stuff on YouTube as well.
Yeah, he does. I think he does some stuff on YouTube with, what's that guy called? The Swedish guy. Ola England.
Yeah, Ola England.
I think they've done some stuff together because I think he helped Ola England obviously like secure some sort of bigger gigs with the band that he does now.
Okay.
Seven string pickup specifically designed for the neck position in his guitar, which I thought was quite cool. They do like a neck and I think they do a bridge, but they're both passive.
Okay.
Which I thought was, because a lot of the times obviously a lot of these guys are using sort of active pickups or
aren't pretty much all the Seymour Duncan Blackout pickups active anyway?
I think they are. I can't remember the because they do so many pickups now. But yeah, these ones are specifically for his signature extended range guitars.
Okay.
And passive as well. So
cool. Any kind of guidance on what they sound like?
Relatively sort of like, I think they're like medium style output. I think, as I was saying last week, there was the guy who had the signature bare knuckle, and obviously the thing is, if you go for something too high, you lose a lot of the bottom end, because it's everything just starts sounding really, really muddy. But looking at it, I think they do an active version, or a way you can certainly make it active. I was just quickly went onto the Seymour Duncan website, and they're actually saying that you can make the bridge active somehow.
Okay.
I'd have to certainly look into it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wonder if there's...
Yeah, it's weird because you usually can't mix active and passive, so I don't know if they've done something sort of special with that particular pickup or not. But I mean, Arch Enemy, sort of like quite a lot of high gain, a lot of clarity and string definition because of the seven strings as well.
Yeah, interesting to see what those sound like if he's going for a fully passive set. So, yeah. See where we get to.
Interesting, Jeff Loomis fact for you.
Go on.
When I bought my seven-string guitar when I was 15 years old, the only band who played seven strings that I knew were Korn. And this guy that I knew at school was like, oh, you should listen to this band Nevermore. They play seven string guitars and they're really, really good. And so I went on Kazaa or Napster or something.
Soulseek.
And it was pre-Soulseek, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And I typed in Nevermore and found a song called I Am the Dog, which at the time I was like, that's brilliant. This is going to be a great
song.
That's
so metal.
That's really, like, it's really cool. I like it. And I downloaded it and the song was dreadful.
Of course.
And Jeff Loomis was in that band. And also in that band at the time was Chris Broderick from Megadeth.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
And he now has a signature something.
Schecter, ESP, Ibanez.
Yeah, he's got a signature something.
Chris Broderick, Matt? Any ideas?
He has got a signature something, but I can't think what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly what we said.
Yeah, but yeah, Jeff Loomis was in this band Nevermore before Arch Enemy.
Okay.
And, yeah, good on him.
Yeah, it is definitely, I think it's a Schecter.
Okay.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. One last bit of news before, we're almost at time actually, so we'll do this and then we'll do some stuff in the Patreon episode. SIB Electronics announced the Charger guitar amplifier. Now, I'd never heard of SIB before, but I actually got in touch with them and they sent me this press release about the Charger, which is something that's just come out this week. So, interesting pedal, similar concept to the Magnum 44, is that what it was called? The
44 Magnum.
44 Magnum, the Electro Harmonix stomp box size guitar amp.
Caliber.
Yeah, similar sort of idea to that, but it's got a kind of decent preamp built in as well. So you've got an amount of drive and you've got, I think, treble and bass on there as well. So you can actually shape the sound a little bit, which is something you couldn't really do on the Electro Harmonix ones, right? Yeah. There wasn't EQ or anything on there.
No, there was not.
No. So, it's a little kind of stomp box size guitar head, essentially, that looks like a pedal, and will go anywhere from 20 to 50 watts, depending on what cab you're plugging it in. Obviously,
wow.
That will draw a different impedance. Different
sure.
impedance
yeah,
cabs,
yeah.
I mean, it will draw a different output. But I just thought it was really cool, something nice to have in the gig bag.
Yeah, as a spare.
Totally, which is what those kind of, the Magnums and stuff were kind of aimed at. But I always thought they weren't particularly well built.
I had a 22 caliber, and it was rubbish.
Yeah.
I used it for one gig, and then I sold it because it was rubbish.
Yeah.
Even as backup, I never used a 44 Magnum, but by all accounts they were quite a lot better.
Yeah,
there's I think the 44 Magnum was better just purely because it had just like a little bit more headroom.
Yeah.
But it's just like the sort of great backup tool, or great for if you want to make like a rig stereo like really quickly if you've got like a small amp, and just for like sort of cleaner stuff because there was no way to kind of really drive it.
Yeah.
And this actually looks really, really good, despite the fact that the graphic on the front looks like there's a speaker on it. There isn't.
That confused me as well, because when I got the press release, I was like, is this like the Dan Electro thing where there's like a little speaker in a pedal? And it took me a while to like read it all, and I was like, no, there is no speaker here. It's got like some weird like warped speaker grill picture on the front.
Do you know what would be good is if someone made something like this, but put an effects loop in it. So you had a preamp side, so you had a volume for preamp, or like a gain, an EQ, and a power amp, then had an effects loop so you could put it on your pedal board and then still use all your effects either like in a virtual effects loop, you know, after the preamp, before the power amp, and then you could then use drives before it. Because with this, it's going to be great until you start maybe using a bit more gain, and then there's no way you can run like delays or anything, or you know, it's going to sound a bit muddy. So I thought it'd be quite good to someone do that and actually make something that's designed to go on a pedal board, and then you just plug it straight into a cab.
I tell you, this would be this sort of brings us full circle a little bit, in that something like this would be good as if you're in a band that only has one guitarist, but you're playing shows with bands that potentially, you know, you might have, there might be two cabs at the show.
A venue,
it might be worth
put it in the gig bag.
Put it, and then if there's the option to run it into,
definitely,
a, you know, to give you the option of that stereo rig.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Mm. Cool idea. Nice. So we're almost up at about time. We did get a load of questions this week from the Facebook group. I think we're going to go and do them over on the Patreon episode. We've got questions from Vince about the Gibson RD Artist bass. Question from Andrew about his PA situation. Question from Simon about his Fender USA Tornado. Question from Cy about weird guitar dreams.
Oh, no.
And a question from Jeremy about band names.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff.
We're not the people to be talking about band names.
Exactly. That's why I put it in the Patreon episode. I think it'll be good. And so if you want to join us for that episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're from as little as $5 a month. You get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds every week. Or for $10 a month, you become one of our exclusive backers, of which we've only got 4 positions left now.
Holy moly.
So we capped it at 20. So if you want to get in on that, now's your last chance to dance, as it were, and get in on that as these people have.
Oh, I haven't got the list up, sorry. Okay. Andy McKenzie, Joe Depto, Eric Seary, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Dale Rasko, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Fletcher, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moog Gravett, Colin Anderson.
There we go. Little jazz rendition this week.
Wow. We're like the judge out of jazz.
We are. I like that a lot. That was good. Felt like that helped me get through the last few minutes of this podcast. It was good. So more stuff over, as always, at patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're going to do an extra half an hour of your questions.
I just want to say, every week Mark sends through a little roadmap of what we're going to talk about roughly. And the Patreon content is the questions that we don't get around to. We didn't get around to any of the questions.
Sure,
this week.
Sure. But, so, you know, we've selected some good ones for the Patreon. And
then we'll
do the rest next week. There's some good stuff about different fuzz pedals and things like that, and how to mount an ISO brick under a pedal board. We'll do that next week. That'll be good. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, or you can head over to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, to submit questions and talk to other guitar nerds and just generally be friendly and boot off people that are posting up videos without priorly getting involved in the group. Or you can follow us on Twitter @guitar nerds, or follow us individually @mark_random, @matt_nicey, @jybm1. Do head over to the Periscope as well @guitar nerds, because we're going to be doing quite a lot of stuff. Sounds like me and Matt might have some time off at the same time, so we might do some guitar stuff. Instagram @guitar nerds, or just head over to the website, guitarnerds.net. You get some news, get your videos, get your podcasts, get it all there. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Goodbye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.